Welcome to the Garden Talk Podcast, where we interview growers from all over the world, both beginners and experts, seeking to learn more about what they know about gardening and how they do things in their garden. Hey everybody, for those of you that don't know me, my name is Chris, aka Mr. Grow It, and you're tuned into the Garden Talk Podcast. This is episode number 130. In this episode, I interview Welcome to the Grow Tent. Some of you longtime listeners of the podcast may remember him from episode 5 back in February 2021. Great episode there where he gave a ton of advice on beginner gardening. This time around, we get into plant breeding. He has been breeding for the past 7 years and has created many amazing crosses. He talks about some of the crosses that he's done and his methods for creating his own strains. If you want to see short clips of these podcast episodes, search Garden Talk Clips on YouTube. I also have a gardening channel where I show the plants that I grow. I'll have both those channels linked down in the YouTube description section below. One of my goals for this podcast is to bring free information about gardening to the general public. That being said, I'd like to thank the sponsors of today's episode who helped make that goal possible. Thanks to Seedsman for sponsoring this episode. Go to seedsman.com, pick yourself up some amazing genetics, and use the discount code MrGrowIt, AC Infinity. Check out their humidifiers, which can help increase the humidity in your grow space. Their humidifiers have 10 different levels and smart control features such as VPD and humidity programming, so you can get precise humidity control. Click the link in the description section below so you can learn more about their humidifiers, and the discount code MrGrowIt15 works on both Amazon and their website, acinfinity.com. Stash Blend. Stash Blend is a 2-1-5 plant additive that can be used with synthetic bottled nutrients or in living soil systems. Simply mix 1/2 teaspoon of Stash Blend into a gallon of water, then water your plants with it. Ingredients include corn steep liquor, seaweed extract, humic acid, beneficial bacteria, silica, and mycorrhizal fungi. Check it out at stashblend.com, link in the description section below, and use the discount code THESTASH. Mars Hydro. Check out their all-in-one grow tank kits. Their grow tank kits include everything you need to start a new indoor grow system. Grow tent, LED grow lights, inline fan, filtration, clip fan, grow bags, and other useful tools. On their website, they break it down by beginner kits, advanced kits, and premium kits. There is a special price for these grow tank kits, so go to their website, mars-hydro.com, for more details, and you can use the discount code MrGrowIt to save on any of their products. And we're back. Welcome to the Garden Talk Podcast. Today, I am joined with Welcome to the Grow Tent. How you doing?
Hey, what's up, buddy? Long time no see.
Right? You've been on the podcast before. I looked it up. February 6th, 2021 is when that was released, and here we are in 2024, so it's been several years.
Yeah.
Last time we linked up, we talked about, well, the topic was the best advice for beginner gardening indoors, and 345,000 views. That episode went insane.
Yeah.
And, dude, you had so much great info on there. I'm so happy to have you back here. And this time around, we're going to talk about breeding, something you kind of dip your toes in over these several years now. And we're going to get all into this, your story, and so on and so forth. First, I do want to say congratulations to you for passing 200,000 subscribers on your channel, man. That's unbelievable. Thank you. Back when we first did that interview back in 2021, you had 20,000 subscribers. So your channel has exploded over there. But yeah, 200,000 subscribers, not easy. Well-deserved, man. You have put in so much work over the years, man. I'm just so happy for you. So congratulations. Can you introduce yourself for those that didn't catch the first episode we did together?
Yeah, if they haven't seen that episode, they should go back into your older videos and go watch it. It's a great episode. My name's GT. I run a website and a YouTube channel called Welcome to the Grow Tent, where I still focus on brand new growers and teaching them the vernacular, showing them that they can grow this plant without a ton of equipment, a ton of, you know, expensive equipment. And I just wanted to show everybody that they didn't have to pay high dispensary prices and that they could do this, even if they were having trouble getting started with it in the beginning, or they've had a few bad grows in their belt. I just wanted to show them that, like, I can teach you how to use this equipment that you have. You didn't have to go out and buy anything else. I could still show you with whatever you had. I could get you on the right track to where you were getting good yields. And we've had a lot of successful years with it, and it's been a great time. I get to meet and talk to so many awesome people. Like, I love this community so much. Like, in a lot of communities, you can have very toxic behavior. I have a lot of positive feedback and interactions with this community, I really like this community and all the creators that are around it that also put content out. I'm a big fan of everybody. So
you spent many, many years just growing the plant naturally and then harvesting and obviously consuming your harvest. Now you've gotten to the point where you are breeding. What got you into breeding?
It's a couple of things. It wouldn't be right if I said it was just one thing, but, you know, the natural curiosity and just wanting to, you know, learn about this plant that I, you know, loved so long, you know, so much for so long. And I just figured it was kind of the next step. I'm a very big chaser of effects. So I don't really care about the color or, you know, what the fade of it looks like or anything like that. I'm very big, since I'm a medical patient with it, on how the plant or the cultivar or strain, whatever the hip lingo is these days. I'm a constant chaser of the effect of whatever I'm smoking on, because I have ADHD and I have really bad anxiety. And I actually use this plant to control it. I used to be on 3 different medications and now I take none. And I just, you know, I literally walk around with dugouts in my pocket and then just apply kind of as needed. So it's one of those things where, you know, I really like what this plant does, but I don't really like the taste of it. But, you know, how it affects like my anxiety is it's immeasurable on how much I like it. So what if I took this plant over here and then I crossed it with this plant over here where I really like the taste of it? And you know, that's the, you know, how it all started. And my wife says that my ADHD can work as a superpower for me because I can hyper focus on things that I'm interested in. And I can pick up learning curves on things pretty easily because of that hyper focus that I get from it. Anytime I turn my attention onto something, I usually go pretty hard in the paint trying to figure out how to do it myself. So
how many years has it been now since you've been actually doing the breeding?
Seven years. So I still consider myself, you know, completely like new to this. We've had some really cool stuff that we've made. I say we, but it's just literally me. We just sounds more normal for some reason, but I've made some pretty cool stuff and I still consider myself, you know, new to this field with only 7 years under my belt, you know, breeding and stuff like that, but I've had a really good time doing it. Whenever I first started doing it, you know, I was putting the videos up and I didn't think anybody would be interested in it. I was just kind of documenting what I was doing. And people are like, hey, how do we get some of those? I was like, for what? What are you talking about? And then they were like, no, we want those. And so I, you know, whenever I originally started, it was literally, I was just doing it for myself. And then people are like, well, wait, no, we want to do that. We want those. And I was like, oh, okay. And that's pretty much just how it started, how it got me into it. So
what do you personally like for taste, smell, and effects?
I find myself changing as I've gotten older, because whenever I was younger, it was literally just skunky, diesely, and then anything that could kind of calm my mind down is the effect that I was always chasing with it. Is I always tell people my brain feels like it's on a train and it's trying to go down 30 different tracks at the same time. And whenever I smoke, dude, it's just like, and it just like centers it back down onto one track, and I can like focus and, you know, and run down that just one track at a time. Like my wife, she's very good on calling me out on it. She'll be like, you've switched subjects 3 times in the last 10 minutes. She's like, go upstairs and smoke and then come back down and try talking again. Because whenever I haven't smoked, dude, like I'll get like 3/4 of the way through explaining my point, and that'll remind me of something else. And then I'll jump to a different subject. And I actually do it in my videos. And I used to have to spend a ton of time editing it out and like refocusing it back onto the subject at hand. And so that's kind of where the channel, the little mantra for the channel, where I'll, you know, you'll hear me, I'll say, calm down, focus, relax, you know. And it's just me kind of trying to recenter myself to stay on topic, because otherwise I'll just jump all over the place. And a video that was supposed to be out about this is 5 minutes in there of talking about something else. And I'm like, all right, calm down. And then everybody started saying it, because I got tired of editing out the videos is all it ever was. And then I just started leaving it in there. And everybody really liked it. And now if you look on all of our shirt designs, you actually see the relax, calm down, and focus always hidden in the design. So,
yeah, I have a couple of your t-shirts.
I know. You wear them all the time. It's great.
Yeah, I do wear them in some of the episodes. There's a tie-dye one, a couple tie-dye ones you sent me, and then a Purple Frost Giant one, which I'm sure we'll be talking about Purple Frost Giant here pretty shortly.
Yeah, it's a great
But
one.
As far as the taste, smell, and effects that you personally like, are you looking to do that in your breeding as well? Like, are those the characteristics or traits you look for when selecting parent plants for breeding projects, or are you kind of going after what the market wants instead?
Well, I'd be remiss to say I wasn't paying attention to the market, because like some of these breeding projects, like if you take anything out, like, you know, 7 or 8 generations, you could spend a decade working on something. And if it's not something that the market wants, then you spend a decade working on something that's no longer popular. Like, you know, what if you had somebody that was like, oh yeah, I'm really into 8-track players and I'm going to spend a bunch of time, you know, making a cool 8-track. Nobody wants 8-track players anymore. You know, like right now, I feel like the main majority of the market's really focused on like fruity or dessert kind of stuff. And so I do take those factors in there, but my main goal whenever I'm breeding is effect. It's effect driven. Sure. I love when they smell fantastic. I love the taste, but it's, and those factors do play into it. But at the same time, since I come at it with a medical kind of perspective. So it's 100%, how does this affect me? How do I like it? How do the people that tried it like it? Do they like this at all? You know, if they don't like it, you know, I've had ones where I made where I thought they were great, but they just did not get a great reception from like the public. And, you know, that's why you do tester runs where you're like, well, what did you guys like this? They're like, yeah, it grew great, but I didn't really like the flavor profile, or, you know, maybe it came out a little extra menthol-y or something like that. And, you know, it's just, you have to base your decisions on, you know, kind of like the majority of your clientele, what they like, you know, stuff like that. If I was just making it for me, then I wouldn't care what anybody else said. You know what I mean?
That makes sense. I'm sure it's, you got to be a balancing act, right? A little bit of both. You got to satisfy yourself and the market.
Yeah. Now, I mean, luckily the market isn't too far away from what I like. Some of the more like candy smelling strains, you know, I'm not terribly fond of, but there's a big push for them in the market, so I understand that, and I take that into consideration when I'm thinking about crosses or which phenotypes I'm hunting down and stuff like that, because what I exactly want might not always be exactly what the market wants. Like, I've had bags where I opened it up and it literally smelled like you stuck your head in a bag full of candy, and I'm just like, meh, you know. But other people, like, I would use that bag to show off to people. I'm like, here, smell this, and they're like, oh my god, I freaking love it. I'm just like, amateur. You know, it's just one of those things where, like, I can see the appeal to it. It might not be my favorite thing, but I understand where it comes from, because, you know, whenever I was younger, it smelled like that. It just smelled like, you know, skunky, you know, easily kind of. Now it's like you can smell candies and different, you know, scents and flavor profiles, and but it's not to say I don't appreciate it, because I do, because I appreciate every, you know, every single thing about this plant. I love it.
Man, I totally hear you with the candy stuff. I mean, I'm not too crazy about that either. I'm more of like a skunky,
yeah.
Even like, I even favor earthy more than the candy type stuff. And
yeah,
but everybody has their own thing, you know, everybody has their own likes and preferences. So,
dude, that's what's so great about this plant is, like, you're like, oh yeah, I really love this strain, and the next guy's like, eh, that was okay to me, but I really like this one. And there's just so many different varieties and variations of the plant that, well, I didn't really like this one, but I really like this one. And that's why I always tell people, I was like, try a bunch of them until you find something you really like. I call it when you find your soulmate strain, where you're just like, oh my god, this is exactly what I'm looking for. And then you go on this thing where you're like, this is all I want to smoke. I imagine it's kind of like Rob with his like headbanger or whichever. What's that one he likes really a lot?
Headbanger.
It's hard to grow. Yeah, headbanger. But yeah, like I found a really one I really liked in your Gen 2 genetics. It was super earthy and like super lemony. And as soon as I found that one, I was like, you're my mom. I was like, whoosh, and then I pulled it and then turned it to where I pull all my clones from of it. So I was like, yep, this is the one I want. Come with me.
What's all around you, almost everywhere you look, and makes your life better? Birds. Learn all about these beautiful creatures in this wonderful new podcast called Birds of a Feather Talk Together. Two experts guide two newbies on their journey to learn more. Mallard ducks, ivory-billed woodpeckers, Hawaiian honeycreepers, blue jays, cardinals, sandhill cranes, and more. Each week we discuss a different bird, and walk away with a better understanding of the birds all around us. Oh, and we have a ton of fun doing it. Listen now. You're going to like learning about these birds. I guarantee it.
Yeah, I definitely want to get deeper into that one. And that's one of your recent crosses.
Yep.
But I want to start with your first cross you ever made. Tell us a story about that.
This was one of the ones where I was not a huge fan of like the smell or the taste of it, but the effect it had. Remember, I'm a super effect-driven person since I was using it for medical stuff. I was not a huge fan of the taste, but the way it would work with my ADHD and how well it worked for me, it's just one of those things where I smoked it all the time. And it was literally just White Widow crossed with Big Buds. And I would smoke it all the time just because of the effect that it had. Now, regular White Widow, I was a pretty big fan of taste and smell. For some reason, this White Widow crossed with Big Buds, it worked. It used to be what I would call my soulmate strain, where I'm like, it works so exactly for what I need. And I can smoke it. I can still go do a ton of stuff. It quiets my mind, as I would say. And then it calms me down. And it worked so well. It was actually the strain that I found that got me I went from 3 medications down to 1 as soon as I, started smoking. It was like a godsend that it was given to me. And I was like, now if I can just get it to taste a little bit better. It was the whole point. The whole thing. This is like the whole reason to start into the journey was literally just for that. And that was the whole thing. I crossed it with this Alaskan purple that I really liked because I'm a huge fan of like a birthday cake or like cake batter like taste. And so I crossed it with this Alaskan purple strain that I had that smelled exactly like. I used to say it was like right if you pulled like a confetti. You just made a cake. Like a confetti cake, vanilla confetti cake base, and then you put like vanilla icing on it. Like that smell that you get when you put out like the icing on a hot cake. Like that smell that you get was the exact smell that I was getting off of this Alaskan purple. And I was like, if I could get this into here, and I was like, wait, I might be able to do that. And then I started, that was kind of like where I took off with that. And I never went into it with ever thinking about doing it for the masses. I was literally just doing it for myself. I didn't think there would ever be any interest in it. I was just, showing people how to grow on video, and I was literally just doing it for myself. So it was one of those things where it was never like even a thought in my head of ever bringing it out. It was just something I was just doing for myself.
That's crazy. And then what was the name of that cross? I don't think you mentioned it.
That one was in it. I called it Giant Purple Monster.
Oh, okay. All right. Got it. Yeah. And so one of your more recent crosses is a collaboration between you and I, which honored that you reached out to me and you wanted to do this collaboration. I thought that was so cool.
Yeah.
It's called Magic Candy Mountain OG. Talk to us all about that.
Well, whenever I was coming up with the name for it, well, just even back that up even further, you had sent me some of your stuff before and I was a big fan of it. Like that earthiness and like the lemoniness that I got from the first time. That's like right up my alley. And so I grew it. It was a great grow. Plant response to training fantastically. Every aspect about the Chill Out OG, I was a fan of already. And then I was like, well, what if I take this? And I had a super great pheno of the Purple Frost Giant that I ended up with that I keep mothers of. That's like my now soulmate strain that I constantly am walking around with just because how well it works for me. And even as a guy, this hurts me to say, even as a guy that is super like a skunky, diesel-y kind of guy, to walk around with a strain that smells like freaking grape soda, all the time I'm like, at the same time, because I'm like, I've transitioned over to the other side. I was like, something has happened to me. I'm walking around with a strain. I mean, it literally smells like grape vest soda, like that smell you get when you first open like a can, not a bottle. But an actual can of like grape soda, like that smell from that fizz that initially comes out of there, it smells exactly like that. And I was like, okay, I can never get rid of this. And I'm actually into generation 3. I'm working on to it right now. And it's, I was like, how cool would this be to cross this with Mr. Growitz? I was like, I think it would be amazing. And then I designed a whole thing of merch and, you sent me those a while ago last year, and I actually planted all 50 all at the same time. I think I got 50 or 60. I planted them all at the same time. And then just, and I was like, you know, keep super dedicated labeling of everything. I end up, the one I liked the best was from a second generation, one of the ones you sent. So I was pretty freaking stoked with it. And I think I put some pictures up on my Instagram because YouTube yells at me whenever I try to show any kind of plant on my videos. And it could be a drawing. I put a drawing. A drawing. It wasn't even a plant. It was a drawing of the plant I put on there, and I got age restricted on it. It was just a drawing of a leaf. It wasn't even the whole plant. It was literally just a leaf, and I got age restricted from a hand drawing of a leaf. I was like, all right. I apologize. I give up. I won't even show a cartoon drawing of it. So it was just one of those things where I had liked it in the past, and if I like something, I want to explore down that road. And then, you know, it was one of those things. And then, like, I got the name from an old internet video that I used to watch, and I thought it worked well with it. And once I had the name kind of figured out for it, and then I did the artwork for it because I like to do artwork for everything. And it seemed like a no-brainer to mix the two with how much I liked both. So
I actually have the artwork right here.
Yeah. There you go.
I love your artwork, man. All of it's kind of similar style. And it's really cool that you do that for each release. And you do shirts too, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, I got one on. I got one on right now. I've sent you a few. I think I've sent Rob a few. Pigeons. I've messaged him a few times about getting an address from him. I've never got an address from him, so I've never been able to send pigeons anything up there in Canada. And but yeah, I do artwork for every single drop. I spend a lot of time on the artwork, and I individualize it for the drop, and then I never do them again. So they're kind of like time stamps as to where you were kind of like hanging out with the channel, because if you have a shirt, I only make them once, and then I never make them again. So you either got them whenever they dropped, or you don't ever have the opportunity to get one again. And I don't ever even tell the public whenever they're going live. I might for like a Black Friday thing once a year, but in general, you have to literally be on the Patreon to even see when the merch store is going to go live. And then whenever it does, I usually only keep it up for either a weekend or 4 or 5 days, and then I close it back down immediately.
You got to get it while it's still there.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Magic Candy Mountain OG. I'm looking forward to growing myself. I haven't grown it out yet. Just got my hands on it and got one that just sprouted. So I'm eager to see how this one turns out, and I'm super excited. So appreciate you doing that, Cross.
Yeah, I've got pictures of it on my Instagram, and I just went by and just clipped off a few buds, and I have my hand laying out like in the picture, and I just grabbed a couple buds, and you can't see my hand under the three buds that I clipped off. Like you could maybe see a fingertip over on one side. But what the coolest part about it was like everything turned purple on the whole thing. Like all the trichomes were purple, the sugar leaves were purple, all the bud was purple. I was like, this really is magic. I was like, this is fantastic.
That's incredible. That's really, really cool. You must be growing some pretty big plants there. How big of plants do you grow for breeding projects? And container, what size container are you putting them in?
I don't really like growing in anything over a 5 gallon pot. I'm just not a fan of the bigger pots. I don't have a problem with them per se. It's just 3 to 5 gallons depending on my plant count per tent. If I have a higher plant count, I probably won't go over a 3 gallon pot. If I have four plants in a 5x5, I'll go up to a 5 gallon pot. So it's not anything crazy. I like the amount of dry days I get out of the slightly smaller pots than the slightly bigger pots. And just personal preference. I wouldn't have a problem if somebody's like, yeah, I grow in 7 or 10 gallon. I don't care. You know, I don't think it has, you know, too big of effect. The only thing that, you know, I like, that's the style of growing I prefer, is just the slightly smaller pots.
And the nutrients you use is going to have impact on it as well. What are you using for nutrients, and how are you doing feedings throughout the life of the plant? Now, when you're breeding, some people do it a little bit differently than when you're growing the plant just regularly. So what do you do?
Yeah. So I still rock General Hydroponics, 3-part, and it's not like, because I'm like, oh my goodness, these nutrients are so much better. Whenever people are getting into growing. I generally, if they go to their local stores or whatever, the likelihood of them finding the General Hydroponics three-part is probably along the top of the list of things they'll be easy for them to find. So it was never that I liked that brand better. It was literally just about, if a new person does this, what would be the easiest nutrient line for them to find? Because you could go get some, I really like this, Nectar of the Gods or whatever. That might be way more harder to find for somebody at their grocery store than something else. They might not carry that line. They might only carry Floraflex, or they might, whatever. You could go through, there's, thousands of nutrient manufacturers. So it was literally just about what would be the easiest for a new person to find, or what would be the most recognizable. And I still grow with it to this day just for that reason. And but yeah, like you were saying, I 100% treat them different, whether we're breeding plants or if I'm just growing them out regularly. The only thing that kind of stays the same is in the veg cycle, because I generally don't feed while they're in veg, because I buy pre-amended soil, and the pre-amended soil, I don't know if people know this, but it already has the food in it. That's why it costs so much, because the nutrients that you would need to give them, they're already in the soil. The plant can literally break down what's in the soil and eat. It's just like if you took something inert and put like dry soil over this, dry amendments in it. It's the same principle. The food's already in there. You don't have to feed. So since I'm transplanting, going from like cubes to solo cups to 1 gallons to threes, and then maybe to fives whenever I go to flower, every time you transplant, you can't think of it as you're just putting in new dirt. You're feeding the plant. That's all new dirt. It's got new nutrients in it. So you're technically feeding. I just am not going in there and manually, making a nutrient mix. But the whole time the plant's in flower, I just treat it like it's like the end of veg. And I give them equal parts of nitrogen, potassium, and phosphorus. So I just give them equal amounts, whether it's 4, 4, and 4, or 5, 5, and 5. I just give them equal parts throughout. And the only other big difference is I never switch over to mag sulfur from CalMag. I give them CalMag the whole way through the grow for the extra calcium. And they always need magnesium. So I just don't need the bulking agent with the sulfur.
I know some breeders who actually will stick with the veg nutrients throughout all of flowering.
Yeah, that's exactly what I do.
They won't do anything. That's exactly what you do.
Yeah, that's exactly what I do. I do it like it's transition week. So it's just literally like it's the last week of veg is the method that I go to. And it's literally just 4 of nitrogen, or let's just say it's 5 milliliters per gallon of nitrogen, 5 of phosphorus, and 5 of potassium. And they just stick with that one because it's a nice balance of everything it needs, because I'm not going for giant flower bulks or anything like that. It's a nice, like a well-balanced diet for them, hitting that food triangle. And I just carry that all the way through. And then normally, if I was doing a normal flower cycle, it would be at the end of week 3, I would switch off of CalMag and I would switch on to mag sulfur product because the stretch is over. I no longer need the calcium. There's mag in both products, so I need mag all the way through. And then since the stretch is over and now I'm going into the bulking phase after a transition week of flower in week 4, I'm now going into the bulking phase of flower. I don't care about the bulking phase of the flower. That's not where my attention is, nor is it where the attention of the plant is, because it's received pollen by that point. The plants, that's one of the tricks to making, bigger buds is we are denying them pollen. And by denying them pollen, it causes them to swell their buds because they're trying to get bigger because pollen floats in the air to attract flying pollinators, anything like that. By denying them pollen, it makes the bud get bigger and bigger because they're trying to increase surface area to catch that pollen that's in the air. Well, whenever I've given them pollen, I've specifically got pollen. I'm painting it on like Bob Ross on each of the buds. That thing for bulking up the flowers isn't there anymore because they've already accomplished their life goal. And their life goal is they were trying to reproduce, and now they've reproduced because they're making the seeds. So
I want to get into pollination. I know that you actually reverse plants, and yeah. I want to get into that afterwards. First, I want to find out, you talked about pollinating females. That needs to happen in order for seeds to be developed, right? Right. Around what day do you typically pollinate your female plants?
It's not really a day. I really do it based off bud size and how the plant's progressing, because you have some strains that you might have a 10-week strain versus an 8-week strain or a 12-week strain. So instead of hard focusing on a day, I actually do it by plant development and size. Generally, If you have a 8 to 9 week flowering strain, it's going to be around the end of week three, somewhere in the beginning to middle of week four is kind of like the sweet spot I've found with them. But if you have a strain that takes longer to flower and I go in and I pollinate it week three, my bud structure, I might still have those little tiny golf balls with just the, you know, the starting sprinklings of pistil hairs. That's way too early to do this, because if you pollinate too early, the bud size never gets as big as it could have gotten if you waited just like another week or so. And then plus, you don't have a ton of pistil hairs to paint yet. You know, like those pistil hairs are your receptor sites for the pollen. If there's not a ton of them yet, it's too early to bring pollen into the mix. And it's really just around, generally it's just shoot for week four. And generally your buds are big enough, but if they're not, just wait a week. It's not like there's a timer on this. Like if you pollinate a plant, you ask anybody that's ever hermed a plant, you pollinate those plants at week five, week six of flower, they're making seeds. They're going to do it. You know, and if you look out into like the, you know, the nature, that pollen's flying around the air all, you know, all year, and they have way longer flower times whenever you're out there. I mean, we all remember the we used to get back in the day. What'd you do when you first got it? You had to sit down on your TV tray or your little rolling tray that you had. And what did we have to do? We had to pick out all the seeds and all the stems on it. And that was somebody's job. You had to sit there and you had to pop the start. And then by the end, you had the shaky stuff that you had left. You had a pile of seeds and a pile of stems. And that's what your job was, to sit there and break it all apart. And now you can put that in your bowls or whatever. Yeah, we didn't have this luxury of having seed-free back in the day.
I'm glad those days are behind us and we don't have to worry about seeds within the buds.
Yeah, I brought myself right back around to it, because pretty much every month I'm harvesting seeded stuff. So luckily now I have machines that do it for me, though.
Yeah. So you bring up a great point about when to pollinate the females. Now, there's a couple different ways you can do the pollination process, right? You could, the way you're doing it, which you mentioned, is you're actually painting the pollen onto the buds. Other folks, what they'll do is they'll take the plant that they've reversed or the male plant, and they'll stick it in the same room and just let the wind naturally bring it through air circulation, or they'll actually shake the plant within grow space. Why do you choose to use the paintbrush and paint the buds versus just shaking the plant in the grow space?
Clean up mess that it makes whenever, because I've done a couple of different ways. Like there's actually videos where you see me and I take the plant and I set it on like a upside down 5 gallon bucket. And then I get a leaf blower and I stand at the back of the tent and I pretend like I was like Doc. And I'm like, all right, we got 88 gigawatts or whatever it is. And I'm blasting, or 1.21 gigawatts, and I'm blasting the leaf blower fan right through the back of the plant. And the only reason that I don't do this is just because of the mess it makes. I mean, the entire room. I don't think people understand, especially if you're working with males, the amount of pollen that they make. It's insane. That's why you don't have to always, you don't have to reverse a whole plant. You can just do a couple branches, just because those couple of branches make so much pollen that it's, you know, it's crazy how much that you're going to get off of there. And whenever I make a mess with it, I mean, it's just, I detail clean very well in between grows, and the amount of gunk that I have to get off the walls and off the fans, because I take the fans down, I take the fans apart, I clean them, I take the lights down, I just detail clean everything in between grows. And the amount of extra work it provides whenever I don't just paint, you know, it takes me 30 seconds to just sit there with, I have this Barbie brush, you know, it's hot pink like this thing right here. I have this Barbie brush that I stole from my daughter's makeup, you know, kit, and it works so well. Like I can absorb so much pollen with it. I can do the whole tent. I can do the whole tent with just one, you know, just pick up a bunch of pollen. I can paint the whole tent with just one brush. And so the amount of work it saves me is the main reason that I do it with a brick, because they all work. All those methods that you mentioned, whether you just put one in, if you're going to do that, you put it in front of your fan so it blows it out towards the rest of the tin, or whether you shake the plant, all those methods, they all work just fine. The only reason I do it is just really simply because of cleanup.
That's a good reason to do it, right?
Yeah, because I got a ton of other stuff in the room, and the amount of pollen that gets everywhere in the room, and then it looks like I've been doing drywall work in there, only it's got a slightly yellow-tinted drywall, and the amount of area that I have to clean up is just ridiculous. So I like to say it was for some really cool reason, but it really just saves me work.
Yeah, I know how it is. I've had some grow tents that, you know, yellow sides, and it gets tough with the ventilation socks are, and they like, you know, come in and get in every single nook and cranny. It's difficult. So I hear you on that one. So are you collecting pollen from the reversed plant and putting into a container and then doing the paintbrush process? And also, do you store pollen at all?
Yeah, I do it live in real time, so I don't ever store any of it. I had, you know, there's a reason there's no company that just sells pollen. It just doesn't, once it leaves the plant, its life is cycle is not greatest. Like, they don't handle, like, can you imagine if you were, like, just brought up a company, they would be 100% legal. You could ship it everywhere, just feminized pollen, the amount of money you can make. It just doesn't survive very well, the shipping process. And I've always just live timed it to where my males were ready around the time that I need my females ready. Because even if the plant is dropping pollen, you don't have to collect it right away. Like, let's say your female isn't ready, you can just leave it on that plant. Yeah, you'll be spilling stuff onto the leaves and stuff, but you can literally just leave it on the plant and then wait your extra half week or week, because you shouldn't be that far off, and then collect the pollen and then put it on there. So, you know, you can use the male or the feminized female as kind of like a little storage locker for it, and then lifetime collect it and then immediately use it. I just never had the best luck with like trying to store it or anything like that. So I just always lifetime it.
Got it. And then one other thing that is vastly different from just growing the plant naturally is the length of time you're actually growing the plant, right? So you're not looking for a specific harvest window. You're not really looking at the trichomes to see, oh, okay, they're ready to harvest, right? You're letting it go longer than that in order for those seeds to develop. How long do you typically let a plant grow until you harvest the seeds? Now, I know that's probably going to vary depending if you have an 8-weeker, 9-weeker, so on and so forth. But generally speaking, how much longer is the plant growing until you harvest the seeds?
I always tell everybody it's around 7 to 8 weeks from pollination date. So I always tell everybody you're pretty much restarting your flower the day you pollinate them. And what I always tell everybody is the second we pollinate them, we no longer look at the trichomes for when our harvest is done. Now we actually use the seeds as our, like, kind of like our trichome markers, because they go through color stages just like the trichomes do. They'll start off green, then they'll turn to white, then they'll turn to gray, then they go brown with tiger stripes. And they're never all going to be on the same page. So we do it just like we do with our trichomes. We're basing off of what's the majority of what we're looking at on the plant at this time is kind of how we dictate with when the plant comes down. So if I'm looking and I'm like, we got the majority green, we know we're way far away. And then, you know, we come back a few weeks. Okay, the majority is white with a minority of gray. I'm like, okay, and now the pods are starting to split open on the top, which we get a really good view of when we can start watching them, because the tops of the pods, they actually split open like this, and you get a really good view window right on the top of them on how they're doing. But as soon as I see where the majority are brown and tiger striped and there's a minority of gray, that's whenever I chop down. So it's just based on visually, whenever I look over the plant, what do they look like they're doing right now? And that's, you know, it's the same way whenever you're looking at trichomes. The plant functions the same way. It lets you know when it's ready to chop.
Got it. And so you are really just creating feminized seeds. Correct me if I'm wrong there.
I do occasional regs, but not many.
Okay. So you're focusing on feminized. In order to actually get feminized seeds, you have to basically reverse a plant that is already growing as a female. You reverse it, and then all of a sudden it starts creating pollen sacs and then releasing pollen. Let's talk about the way you reverse plants. There's a couple different ways you can do it. There's Clodio Silver, there's STS. Some people combine the two. What's your process for reversing a plant?
So I've done all three of those. I've done just colloidal silver, I've done just STS spray, and then I've done the combo of the two. So I've done all of them, you know, multiple times, and I've always found that the combo of both has got me the best results as far as pollen production is what I'm looking for. Because like with the colloidal, I have the least effective way with colloidal silver. I get a lot of plants that they'll make the sacs, and then the sacs will be empty. There won't be any pollen in them. And it's literally only the main problem with that one is just with the colloidal silver, and run into that occasionally with STS spray, not as often. But I've always found that whenever I do the combo of both of them together, I usually have really, really good results as far as pollen production of the plants and the amount of sites that I get to collect it from.
So if a colloidal silver creeping in from among, you're supposed to be spraying once a day. Some people do it multiple times a day to spray the plant for the first, 2 weeks or 3 weeks or something like that.
3 weeks is what, if in the parts per million, they come in different parts per million. You can make your own colloidal silver too. It's not a terribly hard process, but the minimum I found that works is 30 parts per million, but I found kind of like the sweet spot right around the 50-ish parts per million. And then if all I had was colloidal silver, it's 3 times a day from the last week of veg through the first 2 weeks of flower, and then I cut it. And then that gives us enough time because the plant should be dropping its pollen around week 3 to 3.5 of flower, which puts you right on where you normally would be attacking your females with it. So.
And then if you're using STS is a little bit more, I'm going to say hands-off, but less work to where you're only spraying once every 5 days, which I've tried before. And unfortunately, quite recently, actually, it didn't reverse. You know, the plant didn't actually reverse. It was like, what the heck? I planted all around this and it didn't actually work.
Yeah. So with the STS spray, I found that once every 5 days is a little bit long for them. So, and then the time frame's slightly off too. So you have to account for that whenever you're doing your females. So whenever I'm going to make the male version of the female plant and I'm going to use just STS spray, I actually start them into their flower a week or two earlier than the other plants go into flower, because whenever you're doing just STS spray, it's once every 5 days for the first 30 days of flower. So you can still be spraying 4 weeks, and if you stop there before the 4 weeks are up, it'll end up with no pollen at all. You won't even get the reversal. So it's very important, but I've dropped it down to every 3 to 4 days that I'll do it, and I'll just do it once a day right before the lights go off. You know, the big thing is the light actually damages the STS spray, and then whenever you're combining it, if you don't combine it in the right order, which there's only two parts, but if you put it in wrong and you don't get that cool fizzy reaction that happens in it, and if you don't get it that right, or if you add it too fast, it actually will make it inert, and you have to watch for the fizz. So you want to keep it just to where it keeps fizzing on itself, and then you know you're doing it right.
Interesting. Yeah, I'll have to go back and try doing both the combo, like you mentioned, in order to try to get a better result there.
The combo's great. So whenever it's a combo, I kind of switch it up. So for the last 2 weeks of veg, I'll do just STS spray for once every 3 days. And then whenever we switch into flower, I switch over colloidal silver and I spray it three times every day for the first 2 weeks, which is literally the worst part of the grow, that I have to go into there 3 times a day, every single day, Monday through Sunday.
You got to do what you got to do in order to get that reversal, right?
You got to do what you got to do. It's my least favorite part, though. I'm just like, and it's not like it's crazy hard, but it's just my finger gets tired because I have like the pump sprayer bottle like this, because you don't need a ton of it and you can go through it way too fast when you have like the big spray bottles. So I just have this little spray bottle and my hand just gets tired of spraying all the different branches. So.
And you had mentioned that you only reverse a branch or two. You're not reversing the entire plant.
It depends. It depends on how much I need. So the biggest thing, especially because you can run into problems where you don't get any pollen from the pollen sacs, or they don't reverse. So if, let's say, I'm trying to pollinate 6 plants, I'll grow 9 and I have 3 different plants that I'll pull into a different tent to reverse, just because I want to weigh out I don't ever just put all my chips on one, because I don't store pollen. So I will grow extra plants just to have backups in case, you know, hey, that one, what if something happens? What if a fan falls on it and breaks it and kills it? And now I have nothing, because now I have no males or females that are anywhere close to being ready to reverse. And so I always just have backups on backups whenever I'm getting ready to, you know, go through that process. Cause I want to make sure that if I want to make a line that, like, oh no, this didn't reverse, or I didn't get as much pollen as I wanted, which is never usually the case, but it does occasionally happen. But I always have backups on backups just in case, but it makes me go through a lot of colloidal silver and STS spray though.
Got a safe sided, right?
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, maybe if I had a giant storeroom and the pollen stayed really well, it'd be one thing. But I just don't like the staying power of the pollen once it leaves the plant. So I just make sure I have plenty of females on deck that are giving me pollen.
Got it. So we talked about the reversal process. We talked about really growing the plants, you know, the nutrition you use, container size, how long you're letting the plants grow, when you're pollinating. Now, what's your process for getting seeds tested, right? You know, an ethical thing to do would be before releasing to the public would be to get them tested.
Yeah.
What's your process for that?
Well, I actually have a beta tester program built into my Patreon. And then on top of it is, you know, I never sell anything. So all my stuff, all the stuff I make, I give away completely free to the people on my Patreon. I don't ever charge for it. So I have a huge sampling audience that does a lot of testing for me. Like, hey, we like this. Hey, we don't like this. These are the germination rates that we got. These are, you know, like of the ones that came up, this is what we're having with it. And I know before it even ever goes out to the mass of the Patreon, because I have a beta tester program that helps me with the testing of them. And we go through a pretty extensive back and forth with everything we're seeing. And then when it goes out to the Patreon, I get this huge, you know, envelopment of information from growers of all styles, whether they're doing hydro or whether they're doing any kind of media based or whether they're new or very expert growers. I get this, just this huge information dumps every time. And every time we release a line, I just feel like it makes me a better and better grower. And what I'm trying to do, kind of refine the process every single time we do a drop. And I mean, I've got to the point now where I'm doing usually 5 to 6 new drops per year. So it works out pretty well. And dude, the Patreons are awesome. I mean, they're such great people. And I really am thankful for this community and what it's done for my life. It's amazing. And I really love interacting with the people of this community every day. So it's been great.
Sounds like you have a great support system over there. I know a lot of folks, breeders in particular, who look for testers or have testers. Some of them just ghost. Like when I first sent out the Chill Out OG, that cross that I made for testers, 80% of the people just didn't even respond.
After they never respond. You never know. Yeah, you never know what happens.
I got nothing from them, and yeah. I was looking for the feedback. So it sounds like you got some pretty stable stuff over there on the Patreon side of things.
Yeah, we built a pretty amazing Discord that I actually had to turn the notifications off because it's, you know, thousands and thousands of people in there. Some of the best growers I've ever seen, and the feedback and the picture up, you know, I get live time, real pictures. Every new line has its very own dedicated, you know, browser section to it. And, you know, you can just sit there and look at the progress and see what kind of, if people are having problems or the luck or the different terpene profiles that we're having through there. It's been great. Like, oh, this one's super menthol-y, or this one's this. It's really great to get that kind of feedback on something that you're making, to have thousands of people all doing it. And usually whenever I release it, they all are planting at the same time. To have that kind of feedback and information instantly back on it, it's been great. So
that's awesome. So what advice do you have for those that are just getting into breeding?
Don't chase hype would probably be my number one. And figure out what you like first and think of the reasons you're doing it. You know, the main one would be think of the reasons you're doing it and don't chase the hype. I think you'll find if you go after what you like, the process won't become arduous or like work, because you're going to actually enjoy doing it. Because crossing things, you know, it's not a ton of work. It depends on what you're doing, but it's definitely more work. Especially if you're reversing and feminizing and then getting all the seeds, if you don't have the cool machines that do it for you, it's a lot of work to pick all them freaking seeds out of there.
I think that's some really good advice. There's one more question I wanted to ask you that wasn't actually on the list, which is talking about hype, chasing the hype. There's a lot of hype around triploids right now. What are your thoughts on triploids?
I got a lot of heat. I got a lot of people that agreed with me, and then I got a lot of heat from it. I think my view on it is just maybe jaded, because, you know, I grew up in the Midwest, so I was watched a lot of my friends' families really get messed over with non-reproducing seeds and stuff like that. So for the new growers, I think they're fantastic. I'm not a fan personally, but for new growers, for something that won't seed or herm, I think it's a crutch. But I understand why you would like them. I think it's the same thing as like when autos first came out. You know, there's like, oh, you don't have to switch them over. So they do switch over to flower all by themselves. Not that hard to switch a timer. But, you know, I'm a photo period guy. So it's not one of my favorite things, but I do understand why people would like them, especially where they, you know, they won't make seeds no matter how bad you treat them. I would rather just become a slightly better grower so I didn't worry about herming my stuff. That's going to get me in trouble anyway. I got a lot of hate from that video. I got a lot of great views on it, but I did get a lot of hate from that video.
Yeah, the video, I'm looking at your page right now. The dangers of triploids and the problems coming. Yeah. 31,000 views.
So that's, you got a bunch of views.
I need to click. I clicked on it. I listened to you, and you brought up some good points in there. Now, you mentioned that they're not supposed to herm, right? So, like, unfortunately, they're not seeing that now. Like, there's we've got the donuts triploid from Humboldt. People reporting herms. You know, people sucks, reporting man. Herms happening there, which
I never like to hear that.
Interesting. Mentioned they're not supposed to, but we're out seeing it. So, yeah.
Yeah, strange. That makes me sad. You know, because, like, I understood, like, how cool that could be, especially for new growers. Like, you don't have to worry about this herming. I understood the point of it, and I understood the appeal of it. At the same time, that's like, as a new grower, I would want people to treat, you know, I would want you to treat the cold, not just the cough. Like, why are you coughing? Why is this plant doing this? Oh, no, we're just gonna make a plant that doesn't do it. Yeah, but you'll get better results in the long run if you figure out why this is happening. What stressor are you doing to it that's causing it to herm? And that's just crazy, because that was supposed to be a plant that just genetically wouldn't have been allowed to make seeds. Life finds a way.
So I want to wrap things up here. Tell us, how can the listeners find you, and what do you have upcoming in the future?
How they can find me, they can either just go to my YouTube channel. It's called Welcome to the Grow Tent, especially if you're looking for any kind of new information on how to grow these plants. I can definitely show you how to do it with any equipment that you have. I'll be able to show you how it works. Or you could join the Patreon, and we can do one-on-one sessions just like me and Mr. Grow It are doing right now. I will actually sit here in my box, and on the other box will be your garden, and I work with your gardens just like I'm sitting there in your grow room with you, and I do that all the time, and then I get on there and I answer questions every single day on my Patreon. We have one of the biggest canic content creation Patreons there is. We have close to 700 and something members. It varies up and down, of course, but it's a good time. And then, as I said earlier, all the crosses that I ever make, those Patreons get my stuff absolutely free. I never charge a penny for it. And then you get access to all my cool merch that I make. There's a link to it in all my video descriptions on my YouTube page. Now, we have a good time, and it's a freaking blast. So, and then as far as upcoming, I have a bunch of new crosses. We call it GT's Year of Fire that's coming up this year. We have the very next drop is blueberry muffins crossed with blueberry pie. And then I have early lemon berry that is getting crossed with super great PFG. Then we have runts getting crossed with strawberry mimosa. And then the kind of like the biggest thing for the end of the year is I have a collab coming up with Dark Horse. And we are crossing their Bruce Banner S3 with my PFG for maybe some of the coolest artwork ever made. I just have to figure out how to not get sued by Marvel for the idea I have in my head for it. So,
awesome. Lots of good stuff upcoming. I will be tuned into that, and hopefully I can get my hands on some of those crosses because they sound amazing.
Yeah, they're. I'm looking forward to them. And I tell you, I'm super excited about it. I'm super excited about the collab that we just got done with. I mean, the people are planting them. They're having, you know, it's like 9,500% success rates through germination. And they're talking about how fast they're growing and stuff like that. So you might want to go check out Chris's site.
Exciting. Well, GT, I appreciate you coming on to the podcast once again. I'll definitely have a link to GT's channel down in the YouTube description section below. If you're on one of the podcast platforms, just search for him. Welcome to the Grow Tent. If you search for that on YouTube, his channel will pop up, and give him a subscription. GT, thanks once again, and hope you enjoy the rest of your day.
All right. See you, brother.
Peace out, everyone. Catch you in the next episode.